Okay, let's turn our Bibles to now Daniel chapter 7. On your outline, you should be on page 5. In Daniel chapter 2, he began to give us a basic outline of the times of the Gentiles, which will be a history of four Gentile empires before the establishment of the Messianic kingdom, which he calls the kingdom of God. Now, in chapter 7, he's going to add some more details about that, the very outline he gave us back in chapter 2. So in capital A, we have the section under dream visions in chapter 7, verses 1 through 14, with verse 1 providing the introduction to what he's revealed. And the date of this vision was the first year of Belshazzar, which would make it 553 BC. So again, he's not putting his book in a chronological sequence of how these visions came to him, but rather he's developing a theme. So the time he got this vision, it was 14 years before the fall of Babylon. At this point of time, Nebuchadnezzar has now been dead for 9 years. And three kings followed in quick succession before Nabonidus finally usurped the throne. And he will last for a duration, but also be the last king of Babylon. So the time he receives this vision is about 67 years old. And historically, chronologically, this chapter comes between chapters 4 and 5. So chapter 7 came between chapters 4 and 5 of Daniel's book. And the dream visions, this is the first vision given to Daniel directly, because what happened in chapter 2 was given to Nebuchadnezzar. If we compare chapter 2 with chapter 7, the visionary in chapter 2 was a pagan king, and the visionary in chapter 7 is a holy prophet. There's also a difference in who does the interpretation. In chapter 2, Daniel did the interpreting. In chapter 7, an angel would do the interpreting. And it's also two different perspectives. In chapter 2, you're given man's perspective, which is majestic. But chapter 7 gives us God's perspective, which makes these empires beastly, animalistic. And verse 1 says, then he wrote the dream immediately while it was fresh in his mind. And he says he told the sum of the matters. He did not write down everything he saw in the dream vision, only its essential features. Now point 2, you have the first vision in verses 2 through 6, with verse 2 and 3, the vision of the great sea. And in verse 2, the great sea is agitated, and the great sea in the scriptures refers to the Mediterranean Sea. He says, I saw in my vision by night. And this will be used 8 times in this chapter. He was beholding, he had a continuous gaze towards the sea. And what he also saw was the four winds of the heavens, north, south, east, west winds, but also the exact same number as the four Gentile empires. And these winds emphasize God's sovereignty and God's providence as he controls human history. And as these four winds broke upon the great sea, the Mediterranean Sea, we should also remember that the sea, when it's used symbolic, is also symbolizes the Gentile world. That's true in both Testaments. There's one example in the Hebrew Bible, Isaiah chapter 17, verses 12 and 13. New Testament, Revelation chapter 13, verse 1, among others. And what he sees in verse 3 are four beasts, some kinds of animals, but not exactly what they seem to appear. And they came up out of the sea, which shows they arise out of the Mediterranean area, and they arise out of the farm among the Gentiles. As the sea points out two things, these would be Gentile empires, but they all arise out of the greater Mediterranean area. It also points out each beast is quite diverse from the other. And historians have noticed the differences with these four empires. And so in history, Babylon is known as Regal Babylon, Medo-Persia, the Philoptes Medo-Persia, Greece is Cultured Greece, and Rome is Imperial Rome. Now the first beast arises in verse 4, and this one is lion-like. Not exactly like a lion, it has the main features of a lion, but has certain things that no lion has. A lion is the king of the wild animals, land animals, and lion symbolizes Babylon, which is also true in Jeremiah chapter 4, verse 7, Jeremiah 4, 7. Also chapter 49, verse 19, 49, 19. In Jeremiah 15, verses 17 and 44, 15, 17 and 44. Now what makes it unlion-like is that this lion has eagle's wings. An eagle is the king of the birds. This was also used as a symbol of Babylon in Jeremiah chapter 48, verse 40, 48, 40. Chapter 49, verse 22, 49, 22. Ezekiel chapter 17, verse 3, 17:3. Archaeology uncovered one of the gates, the key gates of Babylon, the Ishtar Gate, which is now can be seen in the museum in Berlin. The Ishtar Gate shows winged lions, which parallels what happens here. He goes on to describe the events that began to affect the beast. The wings were plucked up. The lion was lifted up from the earth, so in place of walking on four legs, it began walking on 2 feet as a human being would walk. And then a man's heart was given to it. Now, this description harks back to Nebuchadnezzar's experience that we talked about yesterday in chapter 4. And as close as a man could become an animal, Nebuchadnezzar became. And as close as an animal could become human, so nearly did Babylon lose in the course of time its beast-like, animal-like, animalistic-like nature. And in fact, Babylon eventually lost its animalistic nature and characteristics and became more humane. So this line befigures Babylon from the lust of conquest to the building of culture. And in verse 5, we have the second beast arising out of the Mediterranean, and that this one is bear-like, meaning the primary features is that of a bear, but it's not truly as a bear as we know it. And the bear is less majestic than the lion, and often connected with lions. Several examples are available in Scripture. I'll give you one example. Proverbs 28, verse 15, Proverbs 28, 15. And the lion is bulky and heavy, weighty, and conquered by sheer force of numbers. But then also notice as the bear-like creature moves, it's raised up on one side. It walks in a lopsided position. Now, what reached the status of being able to become an empire is the union of two kingdoms, the Medes and the Persians. But the Persians were by far the greater and more dominant power. He also notices there are three ribs in the mouth of the bear, because after the union of the Medes and the Persians, as they began their empire status, they had to conquer three kingdoms, Lydia, Babylonia, and Egypt. Lydia, Babylonia, and Egypt, which gave it its empire status. And then in the end it says, they said unto it, arise, devour much flesh. There was further conquest of this empire beyond those three ribs. Then in verse 6, we come to the third beast. This one is leopard-like. It's the main features of it, characteristics of it, is leopard, but it has things that make it not a true leopard. A leopard is less majestic than the lion, less grand than the bear, but quicker, swifter than either one. And leopard was also used as a symbol of different nations. One example, Hosea chapter 13, verse 7. Hosea 13, verse 7. And this will emphasize the speed of conquest under Alexander the Great. Now, what makes it un-leopard-like is that it has four wings of a bird, referring to the divisions of the empire after Alexander died. Alexander failed to appoint a successor, and therefore his empire was divided among four of his generals. So one division was Thrace and Bithynia, a second one was Macedonia and Greece, but the third and fourth is what's going to play a major role in Jewish history. The third division encompassed Egypt, Judah, and certain parts of Arabia. And the fourth one was Syria, Babylonia, and went as far east as India. Also had four generals who divided the kingdom among themselves, and we'll come back to them a bit later. Asa's dominion was given to it. It was the largest of the empires that preceded it. Then at the point three, he has a second vision in verse 7 and 8. In the second vision, he sees the fourth beast arising in verse 7. But this one is indescript. He cannot picture it in any correlation with the animal kingdom that he knows. So the first one was lion-like, but not totally like a lion. Second one was bear-like, but not totally like a bear. The third one was leopard-like, but not totally like a leopard. This one is indescript. They cannot connect it with any animals he knows. But he mentions this is terrible, powerful, strong exceedingly. He had great iron teeth. And the iron is the same as the fourth empire in the image of Daniel chapter 2. And it crushed those it conquered. It devoured and broke in pieces and stamped the residue with its feet. And so it has a tendency to crush civilizations, which the others did not do. But a key element is it was diverse from all of the beasts that came before it. If there was something different about this beast that was not true of the preceding three animals. And he mentions the 10 horns, which will correspond to 10 toes of Daniel chapter 2. And then in verse 8, he mentions another horn. So while he was considering and looking at those 10 horns he saw initially on the fourth beast, another one started to arise that made it the 11th horn. This one is a little one, a small one, but as it grows, it uproots three of the 10 horns. So keep in mind, it begins with 10 plus 1, 11 altogether. But as it grows, it uproots three, leaving 7, and he makes it, now he's now number 8. And this horn has the eyes of a man, showing it is a horn that has knowledge, and a mouth speaking great things, that this horn has personality and it is boastful. And now the third vision comes up in verses 9 through 12. In the verses 9 and 10, he sees a vision of the Ancient of Days, with verse 9 providing the scene. The scene now switches from earth to heaven. And what he sees in this vision of heaven is thrones being placed or set up. He now sees himself in the angelic court. And he sees the Ancient of Days, a vision in some form of God the Father, whose raiment was white as snow, emphasizing his holiness. His hair of his head, like pure wool, emphasizes not age, but purity. And the throne was a fiery flames, a vision of the Shekhinah, the Shekinah glory, and the wheels thereof are burning fire. And this is a symbol of judgment, as we see in Psalm 97, verses 1 through 5. Psalm 97, verses 1 through 5. Also Ezekiel chapter 1, verses 13 to 21. Ezekiel chapter 1, verses 13 to 21. And in verse 10, he sees the judgment. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. And this is again a symbol of judgment. And he also describes the angelic beings of the angelic court. Thousands of thousands minister unto him, 10,000 times 10,000. Because these angels are going to be responsible to carry out God's decrees and God's judgments. The judgment was set, he says, the books were opened. And it ultimately points to the judgment of the Gentiles. That's detailed in Matthew 25, verses 31 through 46. Matthew 25, verses 31 through 46. And verse 11 then describes the destruction of the fourth beast. I beheld at that time because of the voice of the great words which the horn spoke. So the fourth beast is destroyed in the little horn stage. So again, we saw already there was a progression of stages in the fourth empire. And he's going to add another one shortly. But the time that the fourth beast is destroyed is only at the time of the little horn stage. And instructions describe the beast was slain, the body destroyed, burned with fire. The fire, verses 9 and 10. The fire also in Revelation chapter 19, verse 20. Revelation 19, verse 20. Now turn to your next page. As for the other three beasts, in verse 12, he says two things. Number one, their dominion was taken away. So when the empire was defeated, they lost their dominion. They lost their empire status. So Babylon destroyed Assyria. Medo-Persia destroyed Babylonia. The Hellenistic Empire destroyed the Medo-Persians, and so on. But secondly, their lives were prolonged for a season and a time. Now the exact meaning of this, if you just keep your place here and turn momentarily to Revelation chapter 13. Now the beast of Revelation 13 is also the same as the fourth beast of Daniel chapter 7. And this one also arises out of the Mediterranean in verse 1. And now look at verse 2. And the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, his feet was the feet of a bear, his mouth is the mouth of a lion. So notice you have the three same animals that Daniel spoke about in chapter 7. And the point he's trying to make here is that although the dominion of the previous empires came to an end, all of them left their influence upon the fourth empire. So the body of this beast in chapter 13 is the body of a leopard, and that shows the Hellenistic influences on the fourth empire. The feet at the feet of a bear, and that was the Medo-Persian Empire, and so the Medo-Persian influence was made upon the fourth beast. The mouth of a lion, the lion emphasized the Babylonian Empire, and Babylonian Empire came to an end, but its influences also were left on the fourth beast. And furthermore, while their empire status did cease to exist, they still survived as individual nations, so their life was still prolonged that way as well. But for the going back to now to chapter 7 of Daniel, but when the fourth beast comes to an end, it is a climactic final end. It does not continue to survive after losing its empire status. It is decisively put out of existence. And now in verses 13 and 14, point 5 on the outline, he comes to his, see, you don't have that here. But verses 13 and 14, he sees a fourth vision up on top of the page, point 5. And what he sees is the coming of the Son of Man, coming in the clouds of heaven, the clouds of heaven, a symbol of the Shekinah glory, as in Psalm 18, verse 11 and 12, Psalm 18, verse 11 and 12. And now the Son of Man, in the Shekinah glory form, comes to the Ancient of Days. He comes to the God the Father, and he was, and it says, they brought him near before him. The Son of Man is conducted to the throne of the Father by the angels that he saw up in heaven. And in verse 14, this one now receives the reception of the kingdom of God. He's given dominion, glory, kingdom, and the purpose is that all should serve him, peoples, nations, languages. His dominion will be everlasting, that shall not pass away. And this is a kingdom that shall never be destroyed. Well, the Messianic kingdom itself lasts for 1,000 years. The rule of the Messiah upon the throne of David will continue into the eternal kingdom and into the eternal order. At that point, the visions come to an end. So come to the capital B with the interpretation in verses 15 through 27. In verses 15 and 16, it makes a request. And in verse 15, it shows the effect on Daniel. My spirit was grieved in the midst of my body. The actual word in Aramaic is the word sheath. Not my spirit, but my sheath. Because the soul in the body is seen as being like a sword in a sheath. And you have different kinds of shapes and sizes of swords, so the sheath has to be made directly to fit the kind of sword that the sword will have to be put into it. And so the soul in our body will be in the very same form and size as our body. It's not a ghostly thing type thing, but the soul in the body is like the sword in its sheath, and it'll be shaped the way we are shaped. And if you're not happy about your shape, don't worry, with the resurrection, the glorified body will be perfect. And he says, the visions of my hair trouble me. So in verse 16, he makes the request, I came near unto one that stood by, this divine interpreter, asked him the truth concerning all this. In response, he told me, he made me know the interpretation of the things. So Daniel lets the reader know, he didn't merely guess at what the intent was, what the meaning was. He was instructed exactly what things would be. The angel gives him, first of all, a summary interpretation in verses 17 and 18. As far as the beasts in verse 17, the four beasts represent four kings or four kingdoms. They arise out of what? The earth. Now notice, earlier they arose from the sea. Now they arise out of the earth. So some people in reading Revelation chapter 13, where the Antichrist arises out of the sea and the false prophet arises out of the land or out of the earth, they interpret the sea correctly as meaning the Gentile world. But they misinterpret the earth to represent the Jewish world, and therefore the false prophet will be Jewish. But you can see in this passage, that's not the way to interpret it. Because these same four beasts arose out of the sea, which shows these are Gentile empires, they also rise out of the earth or the land. And so that emphasizes not any ethnic identity, but simply these are human and not divine. These are earthly, not heavenly. So these four empires are Gentile empires, but now you also learn from verse 17, they are human empires. So what we see here is a further development of what we saw back in Daniel chapter 2. Babylon was dealt with from chapter 1, verse 1 through chapter 5, verse 30, and earlier mentioned in chapter 7, verse 4. The Medo-Persian Empire was dealt with previously in chapter 2, verse 39, chapter 5, verse 31 through chapter 6, verse 28, 531 through 628, chapter 7, verse 5, chapter 8, verses 3 through 7, 8 through 7, and also chapter 10, verse 1 through chapter 11, verse 2, 10:1 through 11:2. And then the Hellenistic Empire was also dealt with back in chapter 2, verse 39, chapter 7, verse 6, 7, verse 6, and then chapter 11, verses 3 through 35. 11, 3 to 35. And the fourth empire was dealt with in chapter 2, verses 40 through 43, chapter 2, verses 40 through 43, chapter 7, verse 7 and 8, chapter 7, verse 7 and 8, also verses 19 to 27, 19 to 27, then chapter 9, verse 27, 9:27, and finally in chapter 11, verses 36 to 45, 11, 36 to 45. But in verse 18, the divine kingdom, the kingdom of God, this will be given to the saints of the Most High. And the saints of the Most High shall receive the kingdom. The word saints is used seven times in Daniel's book, and it's always in reference to Israel and believing Israel. And they shall possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. He's given a summary interpretation, which he can connect with some previous revelation he received already. But what he wants to know now is further information. So you have in point 3, the second request in chapter 7, verses 19 to 22. And he specifies what he wants some details about. First of all, in verse 19, details about the fourth beast. And again, he focuses on the fact in verse 19 that the fourth one is diverse from the other three. There was something about this empire that was distinctive from the other three empires. And we'll see what that is a bit later. Furthermore, he was exceeding terrible, whose teeth were of iron and nails of brass. And this is new information. Nails of brass was not related to him earlier, but he obviously saw it. This one devoured broken pieces and stamped the residue at his feet. In verse 20, he also wants to have some details about the 10 horns. But especially in verse 20 to 22, more details about the little horn. It describes him as having come up and caused three horns to fall. So 10 minus 3. 7 plus him now makes an 8 horn. Even that horn that had eyes and a mouth that spoke great things, whose look is more stout or sturdier than his fellows, more than those other 10 kings. And in verse 21, this one warred against the saints and prevailed. And finally, In verse 22 comes the termination, which will be the fulfillment of verses 9 through 14. This was able to rule until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, judgment on their behalf. And again, God Most High always emphasizes God as the possessor of the heavens and the earth. And now came time for the saints to possess the earth and to possess the kingdom. And therefore, God Most High, who distributes the earth as he wills, will finally give it to the people of Israel. But the first time, the entirety of the land. So it's also the judgment of the saints who possess the kingdom. So with that request, under point 4, it receives the detailed interpretation in verses 23 to 27. Now, Daniel 2 mentioned there'll be three stages to the fourth empire. And here we learn in this chapter there'll be four stages. And combining the two, we'll see altogether five separate stages. But the fourth beast, the first stage of it in verse 23 is the United stage, which is the Roman Empire stage. The fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom upon earth. It is diverse from all the kingdoms. Again, emphasizing its diverseness, there's something different. Now, what made the Roman Empire different to Babylon, Medo-Persia, and the Hellenistic Empire? That was the policy of imperialism. Imperialism means you send your own own national identity groups to rule the conquered territory. Now, when Babylon conquered and destroyed the city of Jerusalem, Babylon appointed Gedaliah, a Jew, to rule over what's left of Judah under Babylonian sovereignty. And then when Medo-Persia became the empire, they also appointed Jews to govern Judea. It began with Zerubbabel and later Nehemiah. And when the Greeks conquered the territory, they appointed a high priest to rule over the Jewish people under Hellenistic sovereignty. But Rome was different. Whenever Rome conquered, they sent Romans to rule. That's the policy of imperialism. And that's what made it diverse from all the others. So you read New Testament, people like Pontius Pilate, Felix Festus, these were Romans ruling over the Jewish population. Then he told this was second stage in verse 23, that this one will conquer the whole world. It will devour the whole earth. And you see that phrase, the whole earth, it means what it says, just as it meant that way with the Noahic flood. So time will come when the fourth empire will devour the whole earth. And we should understand it quite literally, that eventually it'll develop into some kind of a one world government. Now, there are many interpreters get around this by saying, well, Rome did conquer the whole known world, but it's not true either. Obviously, once you conquer to a certain point, you can see there's more out there. And the Roman Empire did not get as far east as Alexander did. He went all the way to the Indus River in India. Rome never went that far east. And furthermore, Hadrian had to build a wall in what was Proto-Scotland, because the Proto-Scots kept attacking his troops. So Rome did not conquer the whole world, neither did it conquer even the then known world. And yet this one world government stage will tread it down and break it in pieces. And then in verse 24, we come to the next stage, the 10 division states, arising out of the one world empire, the one world kingdom, the one world government. And these 10 kings cover the whole world. They cannot be limited to simply Europe or Western Europe. They covered the whole world. So when will government, for reasons that the Bible does not tell us, will finally split up into 10 different kingdoms? So we now have about 180 different countries, but there'll someday be a restructuring of the world system. And in place of 180 plus, there'll be 10 Gentile kingdoms plus Israel. So it'd be more like North America becoming one, South America becoming two, that kind of a thing. And then we come to the final stage at the end of verse 24 through verse 26, the Antichrist stage. At the end of verse 24 describes his arise. He arises only after the 10 division stage. And he will even be diverse from the other 10 kings, and he shall put down 3 kings. So in a conflict with against the 10 kings, he'll kill 3 of these 10 kings. And the 3 he will kill, we'll see later in chapter 11 of Daniel. And the other 7 will then simply submit his authority. And so this last stage of the 4th Gentile Empire under the Antichrist is now described in verse 25, that he will speak words against the Most High. He shall wear out the saints of the Most High. He'll especially have a war against the Jews. Thirdly, he shall think to change the times and the law. Times refers to Jewish festivals like Jeroboam did in 1 Kings chapter 12, when he changed the Jewish observances into different months. And change the law, he'll war against the Mosaic law, which the unbelieving Jewish community will still be following. And they shall be given into his hands, meaning for a time of persecution. And how long will he rule the world? The ration, he says, will be a time, times, and a half a time. And times equals years when it's dealing with periods of time. And you see this in 2 other passages within this book. We haven't gotten to it yet, but we will. Daniel 9, verse 27, 9:27. So a half 7 equals 3.5 years. So time is 1 year, times is 2 years, and a half a time, a half a year, equaling 3.5 years. And again, Daniel chapter 12, verse 7, Daniel 7, time, times and a half a time. In Revelation chapter 11, verse 2, Revelation 11, verse 2, he mentions 42 months, which is equal to 3.5 years. Then chapter 11, verse 3, chapter 11, verse 3, and chapter 12, verse 6, 11, 3, and 12, 6, that's 1,260 days. Revelation 12, verse 14, 12, 14, time, times the half a time. Revelation 13, verse 5, 13, 5, again, 42 months. This oral reference to 3.5 years, sometimes to the first half of the tribulation, sometimes the second half. In this context, it'll be the second half. So God gives them a duration of exactly 1,260 days, and then will come his fall in verse 26. Judgment shall be set, they shall take away his dominion to consume it, destroy it to the end. Only with the demise of the 4th Gentile Empire will God set up his own kingdom, the kingdom of God in verse 27. And this will be the inheritance of the people, the saints of the Most High, the kingdom, the dominion, and the greatness of the kingdoms under the whole of heaven. As to its nature, his kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, his dominion shall serve and obey him. And then comes the conclusion, verse 28. Here's the end of the matter. And the effects had of Daniel, my thoughts much troubled me, my countenance was changed in me, but I kept the matter in my heart. He wrote it down, but didn't spread the teachings at this point of time. Let's go back to the past page we looked at earlier, with the comparison of the times of Gentiles. That's page 13. Now looking at the left column, this is what we saw from Daniel chapter 2. There'll be the Babylonian Empire, Medo-Persian Empire, Hellenistic Empire, and the fourth empire undergoes three stages in Daniel chapter 2, a united stage, a two-division stage, and a ten-division stage before the establishment of the Messianic Kingdom. Now on the right-hand side, here's what we got from Daniel chapter 7. There'll be the Babylonian Empire, Medo-Persian Empire, Hellenistic Empire. The Hellenistic Empire I should have put into here, I didn't put it in, undergoes two stages, a united stage under Alexander the Great and a four-division stage. United stage and a four-division stage. And you have the fourth empire undergoing four stages, not exactly the same as in Daniel 2. There'll be a united stage, followed by a one world government stage, followed by a ten division stage, and finally the Antichrist stage, and then we shall see the establishment of the Messianic Kingdom. Now go to page 14, I'm going to combine the information we have in Daniel 2 and Daniel 7. So the first empire is the Babylonian Empire. The second empire is the Medo-Persian Empire. The third empire is the Hellenistic Empire that undergoes two stages. Again, a united stage, Alexander the Great, and the four-division stage. Then we have the fourth empire, the Empire of Imperialism. And combining the two, we now have all of the stages. There'll be five specific stages of the four Gentile empire. Another stage was the Roman Empire stage. In the Roman Empire, it began the policy of imperialism. Then comes secondly the two-division stage, when the Roman Empire was divided. There was, by the way, an initial division under Diocletian in the year 285 AD, but that did not last long and was reunited. But then under Emperor Valentinian in the year 364 AD, there was a permanent two-stage division. The Western Roman Empire and the Eastern Roman Empire. And the Western Roman Empire was still based from the city of Rome, but the Eastern Roman Empire was based from the city of Constantinople, well, now today is Istanbul. And in dealing with this East-West division, we're still within that second stage. And since that time, we've seen a continuous East-West balance of power. And you can trace the history of each division. Let's deal with the Eastern Roman Empire. It remained in Constantinople until the year 1453. In the year 1453, it was overrun by the Turks. And that's when Turkey was established and the city was renamed as Istanbul. But the scholars fled from the invasion. They fled northward into Russia. They began infiltrating the government and they Romanized the government. And so the kings of Russia came to be known as czars, and czar is the Russian word for Caesar. An official name was then, at that time, became known as the Third Roman Empire. The Third Roman Empire. And this imbalance of power shifted to the Soviet Union and the communist bloc nations. And as we've seen, since the fall of communism, it is still in the process of shifting once again. The Russia is becoming dominant again. Now, the Western balance of power remained in Rome until the year 479, when it was sacked. And eventually it shifted to the Franks under Charlemagne in the year 800. An official title under Charlemagne was the Holy Roman Empire of the Frankish Nation. The Holy Roman Empire of the Frankish Nation. And then a century and a half later or so, it shifted to the Germans under Otto I in the year 962. Otto I, 962. The German kings were called Kaisers, and Kaisers, the German word for Caesar. And it gave itself the official title, the Holy Roman Empire of the German Nation. The Holy Roman Empire of the German Nation. And nowadays, the Western balance of power shifted to the Western democracies. But eventually, there's going to be a collapse of the East-West balance of power. As probably where Ezekiel chapter 38 and 39 fits in, the war of Gog and Magog. In one way or the other, it will lead to the third stage, the one world government stage, which will rise before the tribulation and will also terminate before the tribulation. Eventually breaks down, as already described in Daniel chapter 2, verse 43, chapter 2, verse 43. How long it will last, we're not told. But eventually it breaks down to the fourth division, the 10 division stage, which will cover the whole world. And the 10 division stage will begin before the tribulation starts. It will continue until the midpoint of the tribulation. Again, it will begin before the tribulation starts and will continue until the midpoint of the tribulation. At the midpoint, we will see the fifth stage, the Antichrist stage. At the end of the tribulation, he will declare war against the 10 kings. He'll kill three of them. Which three he kills, we'll see that later today in chapter 11. And the other seven will submit his authority. And so we have a counterfeit King of Kings, a counterfeit Lord of Lords. And with the demise of the Antichrist, that will lead to the setting up of the kingdom of God, the Messianic kingdom. This is not the totality. That's the totality as we see in the book of Daniel. But the two other chapters that I usually have to look to get the a full picture. I don't know if I'll have time for it, but if you look at the next page, there's further information from Revelation chapter 13. Which basically describes the fourth beast. But he adds a new element. He mentions the 10 horns, but he then mentions the seven heads. That's a new element that we did not see in Daniel 7. And then the fourth passage that you have to look at is Revelation chapter 17 that defines the difference between what the 10 horns represent, the seven heads represent. I don't think I'm going to have time to cover all this because with the study of the purpose of these days for the book of Daniel. But you have the full outline here, and also in chapter 16, this summarizes all four chapters, so hopefully you can get this on your own. It's available in written form in two ways. If you have the Footsteps of the Messiah book, chapter 2 deals with the times of the Gentiles, and it covers all the details of more than I can give you in these lectures. There's also a manuscript that you can order from your, download from your computer from Maria Ministries. It's called The Times of Gentiles. It could be downloaded. Or see chapter 2 of the First Steps of the Messiah that provides you with all this additional information. Okay, we'll go ahead and take our offering at this point of time, so the ushers can come forward.